This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. It's Wednesday, so that means Wes Reynolds. He will jump on the podcast here in just a little bit. We will also check in with Brett Ciancia from Pick 6 Previews, and you could follow him there on social media, Pick 6 Plus as well. A very handy thing to have, especially as we get into the conference portion of the college football slate. Just a reminder, as we have continued to have sustained success, much appreciated to all of you. A five-star rating goes a long way, so if you could do that over on iTunes, five-star, Spotify, and also, just a reminder, every episode now up on YouTube. Our producer Wyatt working his butt off to get those up there each and every show. So youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. The subscription numbers are continuing to climb. Last Thursday's preview episode, a all-time high for us for the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. So much appreciated to all of you. And of course, tomorrow being Thursday, we will have the Week 7 preview. I do want to just do a very quick open here about Oklahoma and Texas. And we talked about it briefly yesterday, Adam and I did, when the news came out, courtesy of Pete Thamel, that John Mateer is, quote, pushing to play in this game on Saturday. And let's start with that news. Of course he is. John Mateer is a competitor. He's, I think, from all accounts, a pretty badass dude. And I would be pushing to play in this game too. There are few rivalries in the sport that are as meaningful as Oklahoma and Texas. Red River, right? Always played at the Cotton Bowl, split the stadium in half. I would imagine, as a kid who grew up in Texas, going to Oklahoma after starting his career at Washington State, this was a big draw for him to go to Oklahoma to play in this game. So obviously, he's going to be pushing for it. So I don't disagree with that report that was put out there by Pete Thamel. But then you hear from Brent Venables, the head coach of Oklahoma, and he said he's done zero good on good work. That was a quote from him at the press conference on Tuesday. And he said, hey, when I'm told he's able to play, we'll get him out there. I am so excited for this game because this is what it's all about, right? Two rivals going head to head, and we've got this gamesmanship going on. And I think what Adam and I talked about yesterday is true, and this is really how I believe. If John Mateer was going to play, this news would not be coming out right now. I think they would do a really good job of keeping it close to the vest. And if he was able to play, then he would play. Now, it is worth noting, I was listening to Ari Wasserman and Andy Staples' podcast, and over on Three, part of their team of coverage is Sooner Scoop. And their reporter out there, I believe on Monday, continued to reiterate, hey, isn't it weird that Oklahoma is practicing indoors even though it's 85 and sunny? He kept repeating that. 85 and sunny, 85 and sunny, hinting at maybe they're hiding John Mateer. Because remember a couple years ago, there were some Oklahoma students that saw Caleb Williams practicing with the ones and kind of hinted at, hey, they're making a quarterback change. So maybe this is that situation now. Brent Venables has learned from the mistakes that Lincoln Riley had done just a couple years ago. I love it. That's what this sport's about. The gamesmanship, the playing with each other's heads and all of that. But, you know, it's funny. I was texting with a couple of odds makers in Vegas, and I was curious what their line would be with a healthy Mateer versus with Michael Hawkins as the starter. And one of them said with John Mateer, he would make Oklahoma -1. And without him, he would make Texas -2. Another said he dropped Oklahoma 4 points without Mateer, and he makes Texas a 5.5-point favorite without John Mateer in this game. And I think that's the way I'm leaning in this one, and we've talked about it. Like, I feel like, and look, Texas has been a massive disappointment this year. Arch Manning has been an enormous disappointment this year with all the hype that came in. I mean, think about where we're at, right? The number one, the number two, and the number four teams in the preseason AP poll are all unranked right now. And when you look at Penn State and Clemson, well, I guess Clemson ultimately covered against North Carolina, but Penn State's winless ATS so far this year. So there's a lot going on, you know, with these programs and how much they've struggled. I personally think this is a buy low spot for Texas. And I am also under the assumption that John Mateer, who had surgery on his throwing hand 2 weeks ago, is not going to be able to play on Saturday, 17 days removed from pretty serious surgery. Now, I know Dr. Shin is becoming a cult-like figure down in Norman, and maybe he plays, and maybe he's solid in the game. But I think, too, if Oklahoma plays John Mateer, 17 days removed from surgery on his throwing hand, how productive is he going to be? Like, what is this offense going to look like? Now, I think to play devil's advocate here, we'll discuss this game more in depth tomorrow on the podcast. Texas has an elite, or excuse me, Oklahoma has an elite defense. So does Texas, by the way. And that's why you see a total at what it's at around, you know, 42 for this game. But to me, I think this is a buy low opportunity. And there are not a lot of people out there. If you look at our betting splits over at VSiN.com, it's not going to be a lot of people racing to play Texas. Now, more action obviously floods into the betting market on Friday and Saturday from the casual. But on Wednesday morning, over at VSiN.com, our betting splits, despite everything that's going on at the quarterback position, 75% of bets are on Oklahoma, and 80% of the money line bets are on Oklahoma. Who wants to jump in on Texas after they lost to Florida as a touchdown favorite? Well, opened a touchdown favorite, closed a four-point favorite. Who wants to jump in on Texas? Who struggled against UTEP? Who showed that they couldn't do really anything offensively against Ohio State? But I'll leave you with this before we bring in Wes Reynolds. And the market always changes and has to adapt, obviously. But let's think back to week one. Texas went on the road to take on Ohio State, and they closed as a one-point underdog, even a pick at some spots, against Ohio State, who is the number one team in the country and the defending national champions. And now Texas is a one-point favorite against an Oklahoma team that more than likely is utilizing a backup quarterback who we saw play against Texas last year and be an absolute disaster. Could I be wrong? 100%. Could John Mateer play? That's a risk I'm willing to take, but I just feel like this is a spot where we're getting Texas on discount, and maybe Arch Manning is just a bust. Maybe this Texas team isn't what it was all cracked up to be, and I think that's already been proven, that they are not as good as we anticipated them to be. But what Texas still is I think an elite defense, and if they're going to be facing Michael Hawkins on a neutral field on Saturday, I'm going to take Texas on a discount. We'll break that game down much more in depth. May have a little bit more news regarding the John Mateer injury status on Thursday. But right now, Texas is the way that I'm looking here in this spot. But man, I love it. I love everything about the gamesmanship that is going on with that game heading into a elite rivalry showdown at the Cotton Bowl on Saturday afternoon. Before we take a break, just a reminder that this VSiN College Football Betting Podcast being brought to you by our friends at Rainbow Authentics, the official source for game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards for your favorite University of Hawaii student-athletes. Every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, signed ball, or unique collectibles. You're capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student-athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear, Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your very best every game day. So check them out, rainbowauthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends over at Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. That's the hat that I'm wearing here today. saw Micah Alejado, the quarterback of Hawaii, doing a TV appearance over the weekend, and he was rocking a Rainbow Authentics hat. So check him out, rainbowauthentics.com. Quick break, Wednesdays with Wes. On the other side, it is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, it is Wednesday, and that means Wednesdays with Wes is here, the pride of Indianapolis, IU alum, and he won't be hearing it because he'll be there in person, but come 3:30 Eastern on Saturday, Indiana, Oregon, top 10 matchup, CBS. Who needs the SEC, right, Wes, when we've got a top 10 matchup at Autzen Stadium? Oregon, number 3, Indiana, number 7. Certainly not the biggest game in school history. I think that still goes to the game they played in the college football playoff a year ago. But College Game Day, yet again, will be at an Indiana game. And as we have learned, it was no fluke. 2024, Indiana is back, and I think they're better this year. You are headed out to Autzen on Saturday, so give us the travel plans as you head out to Oregon, Indiana. And for, you know, it's got to be interesting, right? I imagine, Wes, when you thought about, you know, Oregon joining the Big Ten and you living in Vegas and UCLA and USC, all right, we'll go to these games, but it'll probably be like, yay, we're happy to be here, get our ass kicked. Now you're going out and it's the biggest game of the week. It's Indiana, it's Oregon, it's a top 10 matchup.
Yeah, we're going to get a rainy Saturday in Eugene, but hopefully it won't rain on the Hoosiers parade from at least a fandom perspective. You mentioned game day being there. You know, Tim, we always talk about, okay, what selections are going to be on Scott Van Pelt's winners on Thursday. I can tell you we could put probably an odds on money that the only person to pick Indiana on that College Game Day panel will be Pat McAfee. he will stick because well he knows where he sleeps and that is with a spouse that is an IU graduate, so he knows where that is going. So he will be the one, the lone wolf that picks Indiana, because the ESPN panel has not loved the Hoosiers. It was like they were that feel good story, and then all of a sudden, man, they're getting a little too close to upsetting the cartel. Yeah, we got to knock them down a peg. You know, we'll see if Oregon is able to do that. But the market certainly believes in Indiana more than I think a lot of the national media does.
Yeah,
we have seen. Yeah, because we talked about that with the Illinois game a couple weeks ago. And we're like, we know that the average Joe is going to be betting Illinois, because they were the hot team over the summer, right? And Indiana was like, okay, they're a one-hit wonder, one-year wonder. And then all of a sudden, you kept seeing the line move to Indiana. Indiana, Indiana, Indiana. And it went up from like 3 to like 6, 6.5. And it proved to be pretty sharp money as they won 63-10. So they came back the next week and bet them against Iowa. Well, then that got from like 6, 6.5 to 8.5. And that was probably a bridge too far. That's a tough place to win. But I think that that was a good big win for Indiana, because those are games that they haven't proven that they can win. Those physical, low scoring games. And it's like, okay, is this a little bit too much for Indiana? And then Mendoza hit Surratt, and that was all she wrote late in the fourth quarter. So now the market's coming back with Indiana, whereas the media, you know, most of the media pundits are going to be like, okay, Oregon's going to smoke him. But the market doesn't seem to think so, because this opened 10.5 and then it's dropped like a stone. And I think it's finally gotten some resistance at the 7, 7.5 mark, where it's pretty much been the last 2 days.
Yeah, we'll have Brett Ciancia later here in the podcast, as we always do on Wednesdays. And I was telling you, if you have his breakdown over at Pick Six Previews, his Pick Six Plus, I was telling you, there's a lot of green. And you're like, oh, Oregon? I'm like, no. Both these teams are in the green. Everywhere you look statistically, they both have been dominant. And even the adjusted to opponent numbers for Indiana, if you look over at Pick Six Previews, among Power 4 teams, Indiana adjusted offense, number 5 in the country, adjusted rush offense, 4th, number one in adjusted passing offense. Defense maybe not as strong, but still pass defense is second in the nation according to Brett's adjusted opponent numbers. And obviously Oregon has been very impressive as well. You know, looking back to last year, Wes, the Notre Dame college football playoff game closed 7. Notre Dame won that game 27-17, couple of late touchdowns from Indiana. And then you go back to the Ohio State game, that game closed 10.5. 38-15 is the score. And I was talking to Matt Eumanns about it last night on primetime, and he brought up a fair point. Look, Indiana has been a favorite in every game outside of those two in this weekend under Cignetti. 12-4 ATS as a favorite, 0-2 ATS and straight up as an underdog. But it is worth noting, Wes, the two teams they played last year played each other
right
in the national championship game. So I want you to compare last year's team to this year's team, because I have said without a doubt that this year's team is better than last year's team. And it's not to besmirch last year's team. I just think this team is better. I think Fernando Mendoza is better than Rourke. I think the skill position players are maybe a little bit better as well. How would you compare 25 versus 24 from an Indiana standpoint?
Last year probably had a little bit more roster continuity simply because it happened so fast, where Cignetti took the majority of his staff from James Madison. They had 13 just from that program alone, and that was a double-digit win team, so they were used to winning and playing with each other and, you know, wanted to go play in the Power Four and play Big Ten football. So you had maybe more roster continuity from excuse me, I think the portal standpoint, but now they're starting to get, you know, a little bit better. I mean, it's not like, okay, they went to the playoff, now you're getting a bunch of five-star guys. But you're starting to get, I think, a little bit better talent and certainly are more athletic, especially on the positions where they've really struggled in years past. And down programs tend to struggle on the offensive and the defensive lines and in the secondary. And Indiana, I think, at the top level in terms of their starters, have been very good and as good as anybody in the conference. Now, the one knock on Indiana, and this is because it takes several years to be able to do this when you've got a new coach and a new regime, is to build that depth at those positions. And this is where, if something goes wrong, this is where it could potentially show of not having that depth. Because these powerhouses like Oregon and the like, they have that depth. Where, okay, a guy goes down, we got a number two or a number three third unit guy that can take over. So I think in terms of this team being a little bit different, It's not been like all the James Madison guys necessarily. It's been other guys that have been able to step up. One of the big stories with Indiana is that Mikhail Kamara, the All-American last year, doesn't have a sack yet because he's getting double teamed.
Right.
He was, of course, one of Sig's guys that transferred from James Madison. But it's these young guys that are stepping up on the defensive line that are making plays. And that's what you saw against Illinois in that beatdown a couple weeks ago. So I think, And there's also a confidence, I think, with this team that, hey, we got a squared away operation, and there's a belief in that locker room, and there's a belief in their building and in their facilities that they can play with anybody. And I think Kurt Cignetti's confidence has really, and bravado has rubbed off on these guys, where they're about business. You know, you've got grown-ups, I think, on that team now, and they certainly play like it.
You look at the quarterbacks in this game, Wes, and both of these guys are top five in Heisman odds. Dante Moore is your betting favorite at 5-1. Fernando Mendoza at around 14-15-1 right now. He was the favorite going into the Iowa game. That was before Dante Moore had his performance against Penn State, before Ty Simpson had the back-to-back wins for Alabama. But both of these quarterbacks have been almost flawless this year. You look at Dante Moore, 74%. Completion percentage, 14 touchdowns, one pick, can use his legs if needed. We saw that in the Penn State game on that 4th-and-1, you know, getting that 1 yard in overtime. And then Mendoza, not necessarily on point against Iowa, but still made the big throw late. If that game tied up, and they pull away there. So you look at a combined 30 touchdown passes to 2 interceptions for these two quarterbacks, both completing over 73%. Of passes. I know you're biased. You're wearing your IU shirt here today, but which quarterback do you trust more because it's funny. I asked this question to Humans on Tuesday night, and he immediately said Fernando Mendoza. And I think a big reason why, Wes, is because he watched Dante Moore at UCLA. He's a completely different quarterback, and I think things have changed for him since he's gotten to Oregon. But I think it's a fair question to ask who's got the better quarterback on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I think from a passing standpoint, it's Mendoza. And keep in mind, too, with Fernando Mendoza, when he was at Cal and he was getting sacked like 50-plus times, he's behind a much better offensive line. And you mentioned the Iowa game where the numbers weren't great because he was getting blitzed a lot. So he was getting hit. He got hit on that big touchdown pass late and just threw a rope there to Surratt. So both of these quarterbacks have been able to throw the ball really well. Just when you look at the different metrics, the EPA, expected points added, EPA per dropback, Indiana second, Oregon sixth. So all these numbers are relatively even, and they actually probably favor Indiana a little bit from the defensive standpoint in terms of the pass defense. And then they get D'Angelo Pons back in the secondary, so that's going to be key. But I what worries me a little bit about Moore is the running game. And that, you know, because we know Oregon can run the ball and they can actually stop the run. That's where I was really wrong on this team, I think, coming into the season. I thought, well, they're good off the edge, but I don't know how good they are in the interior. And Penn State didn't get a lot in that running game against them. So Indiana, I don't know how much they're going to be able to run with in the tackles. I want to see Mendoza run a little bit more when he can, because I think he can run. And maybe they have some design runs where they haven't really shown a lot of that. So Oregon certainly has to be ready for that and use that speed against the Ducks defensive line. So I would trust Mendoza, I guess, a little bit more from a passing standpoint, but Dante Moore with his athleticism, and he can break a run, and that's going to worry Indiana because they have to be focused, because if you go back to that Old Dominion game, and by the way, that Old Dominion win is like getting better and better all the time for Indiana. So Old Dominion, first play from scrimmage, quarterback draw 75 yards for a touchdown on the first play of scrimmage, and you know, broke a couple big runs in that game. So Indiana's got to be ready for that, and they're going to have to spy this guy or he's going to make you pay.
Yeah, it's always tricky to play running props for quarterbacks. I did give out one a couple weeks ago with Taylen Green, and he got sacked a couple times late in that game, but he thankfully had enough yards to surpass it. But you always got to worry about playing running props for quarterbacks in college football because of the sack numbers, and you know, Fernando Mendoza taking a 40-yard loss to fall into the end zone against Iowa. So I can't wait for this game. I'm fired up for it, Wes. You're going to be there, and it should be an amazing atmosphere. So you've got 7.5 in pocket. How does Indiana win on Saturday, in your opinion?
Got to be able to run the ball. And you're probably not going to get a ton, you wouldn't think, between the tackles, even though I think this Indiana offensive line has been very much improved. You're going to have to get to the perimeter with Roman Hemby, the Maryland transfer, Mendoza, maybe some end arounds to Surratt or to Omar Cooper. They did lose Lee Beebe, the UAB transfer, to injury, but I think Indiana's got enough depth at running back where, you know, they can overcome that loss that they had a couple weeks ago. But they're going to have to run the ball, and you know, they're going to have to be at least somewhat stout against the run. And the linebackers, like the big time players, the Kamaras and the Aiden Fishers, the main linebacker from Indiana, transferred from James Madison, where he said, "This is why I came here, to play in games like this." Well, you got to be like an All-American here. This is where you get All-American status or All Big Ten status, are games like this. And you've got to make those tackles, because the linebackers are going to have to be huge, because Oregon, the line is going to give them holes. But you have to be able to fill and not miss tackles, and then all of a sudden, you know, these 2 and 3 yard gains become 7 and 8 yard gains. And that was Indiana's problem offensively against the better teams they played last year, like Ohio State and Notre Dame. Way too many second and nines, way too many third and eights, and you got behind the chains, and all of a sudden you're getting a lot of three and outs. So that's where Indiana, you know, they're going to have to, you know, kind of nickel dime them a little bit. See if you can get off the edge or off tackle and get 4 or 5 yards of carry, so you're in second or third and medium instead of third and long.
Should be a fun one. 3:30 CBS. We'll preview it more tomorrow with Matt Eumanns. Wes will be there on hand to see his Indiana Hoosiers take on Oregon. All right, a couple more spots to hit on here. And I don't know if this classifies as a sandwich spot, but Alabama, really, Wes, is in a tricky one, right? Where you play Georgia and then you play Vanderbilt. And I know, hey, it's Vanderbilt, but still, that was College game day. That was a revenge spot. They get it done. And then next week, they play Tennessee. And I know there's no rest for the weary in the SEC, but you think about this stretch, and not that they're overlooking Missouri, but I just wonder if this is too much here for this Alabama team, knowing that next week you've got your rival that you lost to third Saturday of October. You smoked the cigars after the game, and the market has loved Missouri. I was able to grab a little bit better of a number on the weekend with Missouri. The look-ahead number was 6.5, and now it's 3. If you want to pay minus, I think, 118 at FanDuel, you can get 3.5. What do you make of this one? Is this a tricky spot for the Crimson Tide on the road in Columbia?
I think it is. And Missouri, by the way, they had the bye week last week, but this is the 6th straight home game. Yep. For Mizzou and Columbia. And then all of a sudden they go on the road for a couple weeks. But this is what they've obviously been building for here. I think this Missouri team is pretty darn good. And the Penn State transfer quarterback, maybe Penn State wishes they had him instead of Drew Aller. Because this guy, Bo Pribula, if I'm pronouncing that right, I probably botched it. But he's balling out. And he has been a dual threat, both running and passing. And, you know, Missouri well rested. And now all of a sudden you got a perception with Alabama, right? Like, they lose at Florida State. And we knew that Florida State was going to be better than that 2-10 team that they were last year. But we didn't know, okay, they're going to, like, be in the top 10 within a couple weeks. And Alabama loses that game, and then everybody dismisses Alabama, right? You know, yep. It's like, can Kalen DeBoer really cut it at Alabama? Like, he's not good enough to be at Alabama. And then all of a sudden, they win these games in a row, and they're the toast of the SEC again. That's just how college football works. So Kalen DeBoer is a hell of a coach. You know, give it time there for his operation. But I think that this is a tough deal because you're coming off, because that Vanderbilt game was a payback game and it was a big game. Game day was there. Now you go on the road to Columbia and this is huge for them. I thought 3.5 was absolutely a take on Mizzou. And I just wonder, Alabama, when you have those two big games in a row, it's like, how much gas do you have left in the tank? And Missouri's going to be well rested and ready to go there in Columbia.
Yeah, and there's no doubt, and I think that'll be a common play for us. Let's go between the hedges, or not between the hedges, let's go to the plains for this next one, Georgia and Auburn. I do a radio show every Tuesday in Memphis, and the host, Jeffrey Wright, goes, what's going to be your stinky line of the week? And I'm like, Georgia-Auburn, man, that number is fishy. That number is low. 3.5 right now for an Auburn team that, you know, got off to a good start. They go to Waco. They get that win week one. And since then, it's been a struggle here. The offense really hasn't gotten going. You know, they got screwed over at Oklahoma. The offense just wasn't there and really got dominated against Texas A&M. They were fortunate, depending on the number, to even get a cover there. They had 177 yards of offense against Texas A&M. But now you've got the bye week. You're back at home. It's a night game. Georgia didn't have the stiffest competition last week, but did have to play Kentucky. Of course, 2 weeks ago, Georgia was taking on Alabama. So this kind of feels a little bit to me, Wes, and granted, we were getting a better number last week with Florida, but it feels a little bit like Hugh Freeze's last stand here. The heat's going to really start to pick up. And it also is worth noting, and I think you'll mention this, for Georgia, they got Ole Miss next week, and they lost to Ole Miss, so there's some revenge on the mind. Not that they're going to overlook Auburn, but this is a massive, massive game for War Eagle on Saturday night.
It is, and you're right about their offense. It's been kind of high schoolish, because even I was getting frustrated, even though they eventually did cover against A&M. I was like, this damn high school offense that Hugh Freeze is running. And they got totally outplayed by A&M in terms of the stats, but they were never really out of the game. They end up covering that 7-point number, losing by 6. But now you're off the bye and you get Georgia in. I think that this is a decent spot for them. And with Georgia, I don't want to discount them because Kirby Smart's always going to get dudes. But I don't know if the dudes are as good as he's had the last couple of years, especially at the line of scrimmage, really. They're talented, but they're younger, you know, and you don't have a lot of these older guys that, you know, they just built that defense that sent, what, how many guys in the NFL draft just a couple of years ago? So, you know, Georgia, to me, I do worry a little bit about their defense. I don't think it's like a completely dominant bunch. And look, keep in mind, they gave up, not that Auburn is Tennessee, but, you know, they gave up, what, 41 to Tennessee. So this defense is not the dominant defense of old. They really haven't gotten away from teams. I know they got that score late against Kentucky that covered the number, but I don't know if they can make enough big plays, I think, to get that far away from this team and what we think is going to be a low-scoring game where 46 in the market is the low currently on the total. So, boy, doesn't this seem like it's 20-17 either way, and I think maybe it could go Auburn's way to the good, but I thought 3.5 was worth a take.
All right, a couple more games before we let you run, Wes. Let's go back to the Big Ten. And I opened up the podcast yesterday with Adam quoting our good friend Dave Sharapan saying, "Nobody knows shit." And that is exactly what came to fruition with his alma mater on Saturday as Penn State went out to the Rose Bowl and lost as a 24.5-point favorite to UCLA. I have no idea what to do with this Penn State team moving forward. Is this going to be a situation like Notre Dame? Look, Notre Dame lost a game as a 28-point favorite a year ago and kind of rallied the troops, and they were able to win big. You think about, I'll use that as an example. Last year, Notre Dame loses to Northern Illinois as a 28-point favorite, and then they play Purdue on the road. And at that time, we didn't know how terrible Purdue was, because they were 1-0, they were coming off a bye, and Purdue closed as a 7-point home dog, and Notre Dame went in there and won 66-7. So Penn State's back at home, they're 0-5 ATS this year, they're laying 22 against Northwestern. Do we finally see some anger from this Penn State team, or is this team going to be checked out? I'm curious your take on Northwestern and Penn State here.
I haven't done anything yet. It would only be laying Penn State here just because we know Franklin, you know, they could be the bully, you know, over an inferior team. And this team does have a lot of veteran guys. You know, they're not like freshman or sophomore underclass laden. So you would think that there's a little bit of a pride here, you know, to just take out your frustration on somebody. And oh, by the way, with Penn State, this schedule, I don't want to say like they're totally out of the playoff.
They're in trouble.
They're pretty much 1 foot on a banana peel, 1 foot in the grave here, theoretically speaking. But they do have to go to Iowa next week, which is not going to be easy. And then you get the bye, and then you got to go to Columbus, then you got Indiana coming in. So the schedule is not all that permissible. This feels like they lay somebody out here with Northwestern, and that's a team that I think really has struggled turning the ball over, especially Preston Stone. I know they got right against soft competition last week. They got out ahead of Monroe, and they had to barely hang on, by the way, to beat UCLA, and that was the week after Foster got let go. I think that was Skipper's first game as the interim head coach, even though you would know who the interim head coach is based on what we saw at the end of the triumph over Penn State. So we'll get to that momentarily, but I think Penn State probably lays these guys out, and the market certainly isn't all that confident in it because we haven't seen very much movement here, because it's like, that's a big ask, because to your point, Tim, have they checked out? I don't know if they have necessarily. I think you've got a lot of veteran guys on this team, and there's going to be a little bit of a pride. They're probably going to lay out the Purple Cats.
All right, well, let's wrap up with that game you mentioned. Jerry Neuheisel, Rick Neuheisel's son, got carried off the field like he was Rudy at the end of the movie, right? I mean, this was an amazing moment. You know, Rick Neuheisel watching his son from the CBS studio. I thought that was a really cool moment, just to see how proud he was of his son. They were celebrating like crazy, as they should, right? You beat a team as a 24.5-point underdog. You're winless. You got embarrassed by New Mexico. You lost to, you know, UNLV. This has been a rough year. And now you play Michigan State on the road, and there's a reason that you and I like to look for situational spots. And this is a primo situational spot, but once again, you're paying the tax, right? This is up to 8.5 now, even some nines out there in the market. How does UCLA, after that win, and look, I bet under 1.5 wins when they fired Deshaun Foster. I didn't know if they'd win a game this year. So how does UCLA turn things around and play Michigan State? By the way, a noon Pacific time, noon East, or 9 a.m. Pacific time, noon Eastern game in East Lansing.
Yeah, and with UCLA, how are they going to treat it? Are they going to be like, okay, our season has new life, or it's like, yeah, we're not going to go winless. At least we got some feel good on a really tough season, because you didn't know, and we talked about this game last week, and I didn't end up betting it, and now in hindsight, being 2020, I wish I would have bet UCLA, because you didn't know if UCLA was going to be like what Oklahoma State is right now. Where all these coaches are gone and either leaving or getting let go, and you've got guys going into the portal. So, it's a mess in Stillwater, and you didn't know if that was going to be the same way with UCLA. And then they rised up and beat Penn State. So it's like, do they continue that energy, or is that there that sense of gratification? Like, okay, you know, we at least got to win and prove that we're not as bad as we looked. And now you got to go to a Michigan State team that started out 3-0, and then they're 0-2 now in the conference, but they weren't like embarrassed at USC. They only lost by 14. I thought they were much more competitive in the second half. And then against Nebraska, I think that they were relatively competitive. They went for two there, down 38-27, and didn't get it. For those that maybe took 10.5, were probably disappointed with that. I'm not in love with Aiden Chiles here, the Michigan State quarterback. I think he still has not developed into what he needs to be. What was he, 9-23 for 85 yards against Nebraska, two picks, also a sack four times. But he is a solid athlete, and he has, of course, was with Jonathan Smith at Oregon State. This is the second year for the Jonathan Smith era in East Lansing, and usually that's when you make your improvement, right? That's what they always say, that first year to into your second year. And I think Michigan State probably, this could be buy low, 0-2, so there's some sense of urgency to get that win in the conference. I don't think this is necessarily a look ahead to Indiana for the old brass spittoon game, the famous old brass spittoon game, even though nobody knows that exists outside of Indiana and Michigan State. I think they lay out UCLA. I just wonder how much of an energy dump UCLA has here, where they kind of left it all on the field hanging on against Penn State, and maybe they're just nothing left against the team that I think really needs to get a win in conference play.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And to sum it up, I know people like the recap. Indiana plus 7.5, Auburn plus 3.5, Missouri plus 3.5, nothing yet on Penn State and Northwestern, lean towards the favorite, and then Michigan State laying the chalk there. Wes, you'll have all your plays up on VSiN.com, as you always do. Safe travels, man. Should be a fun atmosphere out in Autzen. Hopefully Cignetti doesn't get on the set of game day and start talking too much shit like he did last year.
No, that's probably not. Him and Dan Lanning, by the way, have been very complimentary to each other this week. No bulletin board material from either of these guys. I think there's respect between these two coaches and these two programs, and hopefully we see a great one on Saturday. Very much looking forward to that trip.
All right, Wes, always appreciated. There he is, Wes Reynolds. Up next, Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome back in. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Just a quick reminder, do hit us with a 5-star review, iTunes, Spotify. Also, hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Let's continue to grow the College Football Betting Podcast empire. And a man who has helped us out with his massive following over on Twitter at Pick 6 Previews, Brett Ciancia, joins us right now from the Keystone State. And Brett, I got to imagine, we talked last week, down in the dumps, but it's okay. Should still make the playoff. Now, lose a 24 as a 24.5 point favorite. Got to imagine the mood has shifted a little bit there in the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for having me back. Excited to break it down with you. And yeah, you can see in my background, it's a Pennsylvania landscape here. It was dark and stormy and cloudy all week, metaphorically and physically. The Penn State upset, but then also the pro teams are getting crushed. The Eagles took their first loss in like over a calendar year, it feels like. And then the Phillies going down 0-2 in their series as heavy favorites. So yeah, it's a rough, rough week of sports out here in Pennsylvania, and the Penn State loss being the headliner.
Yeah, the Wawas are just struggling right now with the business. People don't want to get out and go get their Wawa coffee. But I do want to look at this Penn State team. You know, how did you grade? How did your game grader come out on the UCLA game? Because looking at your numbers, the game grader was 32.6 for the Oregon game, so not great. But then I'm curious what it was for the Northwestern game. It's funny because I tweeted out your top 20 game grader games so far of the year. And the most common response, Brett, was, what was UCLA last week? So how did the game grader look at UCLA? And conversely, what did it do with Penn State?
Yeah, well, there's one thing to note with game grader is that it's not the best resume wins per se. There's a couple of different ways you can look at games. I mean, in terms of a resume win, yeah, you beat a top 10 Penn State team. That's one of the best wins of the season in that regard. But game grader looks at the advanced stats of the game, the box score, the margins of victories, the yardage margins. So it really looks for the most dominant performances. So with this one, it wasn't per se the most dominant of the year. Yeah, Penn State, let me pull it up right here. So UCLA had an 83 in game grader terms. That's pretty high. Of course, that's scaled up because of the opponent's strength when you're playing a Penn State, a top 10 team. Penn State on the other side was down as a 26 game grade. That's pretty poor. They were outgained by 80 yards. Penn State was. They had no answer for Nico. And this is a little alarming if you're Penn State because you're paying Jim Knowles something like $3 million, one of the highest paid coaches in football. You have an NFL stacked roster on defense, and they couldn't defend or adjust. That's the big thing. They couldn't adjust to the scrambling aspect from Nico and Jerry Neuheisel, coach of the week right there. 2 days of prep as a first-time play caller, and he just outsmarted Knowles. So, you know, huge win for UCLA. It might not come as the most dominant per se, but really one of the best, one of the most impressive wins of the season. I called it maybe an App State type moment too, the way it was so shocking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think back to last year, I mentioned this to Wes, Notre Dame loses to Northern Illinois as a 28-point favorite, but they were able to bounce back. Penn State, when you look at that schedule, that's the unique challenge here for Penn State. They still have to go on the road to Ohio State, play Indiana, and go on the road to Iowa as well. I do love your game grader, and now that we've got kind of all of the data for this year as opposed to last year, who is your number one team so far this year when it comes to your game grader? And is it a big difference between the number one and number two teams?
Yeah, well, so far this year, Ohio State's number one. And that shouldn't surprise folks when you watch them. I mean, they're dominating their opponents. They have a key win over Texas. Maybe that has faded a little bit now, but I still think it's a quality win. The Washington performance was really impressive to me, the way they shut down what I think is one of the best offenses in the country, held them 50 points below their scoring average, 300 yards below their total offense. And then last week against Minnesota, 42-3, fully dominant, could be the best defense in America with Ohio State. And what they showed against Minnesota, they're starting to show that vertical pass game a little bit. You know, in September with a freshman quarterback, they played a conservative, but they showed some vertical shots against Minnesota, four completions, 30 plus yards for Sayan. And that receiver stable is going to be tough to defend. So Ohio State is a distant number one so far for me. Heading down the ladder, you have Miami and Oregon and Alabama and Texas Tech, the solid top five. But that's your full season number with a little bit of preseason still sprinkled in. If you look at just the last four games, you know, just pure game grader, no preseason, no coaching impact, Texas Tech is number one. And they've blown everybody out. Look at their record, 5-0 against the spread. And then in all five games, they've won by 24 plus points. and outgained by 200 yards every single game. Nobody else can match that across the country. So Ohio State for the full season, Texas Tech, if you're looking at just the last four games, they're on fire right now.
Yeah, I was impressed by their performance last week. I know under the radar, but I think highly of Willie Fritz. I actually contemplated taking Houston plus the points. Thankfully, laid off of that one because that was an easy winner for Texas Tech. And yeah, you do wonder if they're all just on another level in a conference that all of us anticipated to be very wide open. And we'll see how things play out as the season goes on. Just taking a look back at the week before we spin it forward. Your top performances of the week. You mentioned Ohio State. You graded that game a 104. Alabama-Vanderbilt. This game, was close until it wasn't. A late touchdown, important to some. How did your game grader rate out this game? And where did Alabama's win over Vanderbilt rank so far in this season's top performances?
Yeah, well, that was an impressive win. I think now here's the catch with Game Grader. It looks at margin of victory, and obviously that was a late score. It was like a fourth and two with 10 seconds left. And so that does juice that up a little bit, that extra points there. But people talk about, should you remove garbage times, points, and yards? I don't think so, because Vegas doesn't do that, right? If the line that touchdown broke the line, I mean, they're not going to go back and say, well, that was a garbage touchdown. We're going to give Fandy Betters the win. So no, I don't take out garbage points. They earned that touchdown. They earned that yards. So Alabama's win over Vandy was tied with Ohio State as the best game grade of the week. Of course, you scale that up for an impressive Vanderbilt opponent. Yardage was solid. They had two key turnovers on Diego Pavia, both in the red zone. That could have actually flipped the result, or at least made it closer. They picked off Pavia in the third quarter, I believe, and then forced a fumble near halftime. So crucial red zone defense. Ty Simpson playing at a really high level, too. I mean, ever since that opening game against Florida State, Bama playing almost perfect football, complimentary ball, and got the run game going, too, with Jam Miller. So I really like Alabama going forward. We always joke about this. We had that ticket in the preseason, almost threw it in the trash against Florida State, but they're looking solid. I like them to hit that 9.5 that we talked about over the summer. And you could argue that they're the SEC favorites right now. So really impressive performance by Alabama. One of the top game grades of the season so far.
Yeah, this is and Brett, this is a tricky spot, right? You know, Missouri's one of those teams where the schedule's kind of fallen their way. When you look at who they've played so far, they haven't played a road game yet. They're coming off a bye. Alabama coming off two big games. And, you know, for me, I'm very situationally based. And Alabama, when you think about the stretched Georgia, Vanderbilt, next week Tennessee, this is a unique spot here on the road in Columbia. The number opened 6.5. It's down to 3.5. So what did your numbers spit out on this Alabama-Missouri game? And how have your numbers, because you do have adjusted to opponent numbers, how have your numbers come out so far on this Missouri team?
Yeah, well, one thing to note here, they're also going into a tough spot to play. Missouri, the last couple of years, I think over the last three seasons, number two in the country, home field advantage in terms of just straight up win loss. They're 17-1 at home. I think it's about a 70% cover rate, too. So Eli Drinkwitz, really, really impressive at home. He has talent, too. This isn't your old Missouri. I mean, they are one of the top transfer schools in the country now, consecutive seasons. So in terms of the advanced stats profile with Missouri, if you're going opponent adjusted, they're top 20 on both sides of the ball. They're number 20 in opponent adjusted offense, top 15 on defense as well. Then you want to look at who they played. South Carolina, they beat by 9. Kansas, they beat by 11. If you think back to that Kansas game, that's a misleading box score. They actually dominated the yardage. Plus 350 in that game. The final score might be a little misleading. I think they were very dominant. So it's a tough test. Now, in terms of the game grader projection, I do have Bama favored. I have them by about 4 points. So that's right on, right near the Vegas line, maybe a slight edge to Alabama with the points. But you're right about situational. You know, game grader doesn't adjust for situational spots like that. You have Missouri off a bye, and you have Alabama in the middle of quite a gauntlet. So take that for what it's worth. I still like Alabama. With Missouri, you do have two power runners, though. Keep an eye on Ahmad Hardy and Jamal Roberts. Hardy, the rushing champ in the country right now, averaging, I think, 150 a game. But Roberts, too, these are physical, physical runners. So you wonder where Alabama's at in the middle of this big stretch. It's going to be a tough opponent for them.
Yeah, and I know some of your numbers adjusted to opponent. Alabama defensively against the run has not been great so far this year. So, you know, Ahmad Hardy, probably a guy that maybe some folks are not too familiar with, but he has eclipsed 100 yards in every single game. And Bo Prabula can run a little bit too. By the way, I got to ask, being there in the Keystone State, how many people are contemplating whether or not James Franklin made the wrong decision at quarterback, keeping Drew Aller and letting Prabula walk?
Yeah, well, after the Oregon game, that topic was really trending. It was when Aller threw that game-sealing interception at the end. It felt like the Notre Dame loss last year. People were starting to chirp about whether he picked the right quarterback. I'll say that after this UCLA loss, that topic's kind of out the window. There's bigger problems at hand here. It's like, where is this defense? Where's this NFL caliber defense? Where's this big offensive line that was supposed to be the best in the country? You know, why is the defense giving up 42 points, can't adjust to UCLA? Like that topic has kind of gone on the back burner, because actually Aller played okay against UCLA. Yeah, I'll give him that. So yeah, there's a lot bigger problems at Penn State right now, and it's gone downhill pretty quick.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, astonishing to me when you think about the UCLA defense allowing almost 300 yards rushing to New Mexico, and then Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen can't combine for 100 yards. It's certainly stunning there. But yeah, to your point, I actually thought Drew Aller played his ass off in that game against UCLA. But I want to get to another game in the state of California, in Los Angeles, and that's USC and Michigan. And my colleague, who I'll be doing the podcast with tomorrow, Matt Humans, he's going to be headed out to this game. And as a Notre Dame fan, as I'm rocking the Notre Dame shirt today, I can't believe I'm going to say it, but I'm a massive USC fan, because Notre Dame needs a quality win. And if USC wins on Saturday, that certainly will enhance USC's ranking heading into that game next weekend against the Irish. But I'm curious your thoughts on this one, because thinking back to the preseason, Brett, you were pretty high on this USC team. Have they disappointed you so far to this point of the year? And, you know, are they going to be able to slow down a pretty prolific rushing attack that Michigan will bring into town on Saturday?
Yeah, I was very high on USC compared to the rest of the preseason magazines out there. I had them tied in fourth, actually tied with this Michigan team. I had a tie in fourth, these two teams. I had USC included as one of my best bet win totals at the in July. It was 7.5. So I think they're still trending to hit that. But in terms of making it to fourth place in the Big Ten, I have my concerns. They have failed their first big test against Illinois. They were out-physicaled there. The whole idea with USC's defense was you thought, okay, second year under Danton Lynn, they're going to make the adjustments. They're going to have some physicality in the trenches. Illinois ran right at them, and they had no answer. It actually took two goal line fumbles, two like fluky fumbles, actually, to keep that game competitive, or else Illinois really outplayed them. So I have my concerns with USC. They have a chance to bounce back here off a bye, hosting Michigan, a marquee, you know, old, feels like an old Rose Bowl matchup. So a huge moment for them. But this year is one of those man versus machine where I disagree with my game grader big time here. Game graders got it USC -7. I think that's crazy. You know, watching Michigan last week, they are starting to develop a little bit. And I like what they have in the run game. We knew that with Justice Haynes. We know Bryce Underwood's getting better each week, a freshman quarterback. But really what separated me for Michigan this week, the emergence of Donovan McCulley at receiver, the 6'5", big frame guy, because one of Michigan's problems was red zone. And now he's going up making one-on-one plays. So that's what was missing for me, was the receiver room for Michigan. And I think they at least have found a true number one there. So I think Michigan's going to win out there in USC. I'm disagreeing with the formula on this one. I think Michigan wins it.
Yeah, you look at the teams that are unbeaten this year against the spread. You mentioned one already, Texas Tech, 5-0 ATS, Louisiana Tech, Utah State, Memphis, and then Ohio State. They pushed one game, but 4-0-1 ATS. And this weekend, they head to Champaign. And I was on Purdue last week. I thought it would be a look-ahead spot for Illinois. A couple of fumbles certainly turned things up there for Purdue. But looking at this number and the way that Ohio State has really been answering the bell so far, they're a 14.5-point favorite. Looks like all the 14s got scooped up in the market. So Ohio State getting some love out to a 14.5-point favorite. What do your numbers have for Ohio State in Champaign on Saturday?
Yeah, I've got Ohio State by 15, so kind of right on the Vegas number, but I'm taking it. I like Ohio State in this one. And talking situationally, I looked at this too, because the way the schedule breaks out this year, everyone gets two bye weeks. And by now, almost every team has had a bye. Illinois is one of just four Power Four teams to be playing their seventh straight. And these are physical games. We just talked about the USC game. They had a rival with Purdue, the big blowout loss to Indiana. They've had a lot of tests here, and now they got to rally again, get off the mat and play Ohio State, who's an absolute machine. We talked about it at the beginning. I love both sides of the ball with them. The defense could be the best in the country, elite coaching, and now the quarterback's taken off. Now that vertical pass game is taking off. So I see a similar outcome, maybe not 42-3 that they did to Minnesota, but I see another blowout win for Ohio State. I think they're going to roll. You know, I've been skeptical of Illinois the whole way. It's nothing personal. I really respect what Brett Bielema is building there. But you look at the talent profile on this one, it's a total mismatch. So I like Ohio State. I think a tired Illinois team, seven straight games. I like them to cover that 14.5.
All right, we'll wrap with this. You mentioned you live there in Pennsylvania, but you're a Boston College guy. And boy, that was a rough go of it for Bill O'Brien and company a week ago, as Pitt able to win 48-7 with a first-time starter at the quarterback position. So Clemson, do we see them kind of figure some things out? They're a 14-point favorite on the road at BC this Saturday night. Is BC a team, your alma mater, on what we like to call quit watch? Are things falling apart there for the Screaming Eagles?
Yeah, it was a disaster last Saturday, playing a first-time starter against Pittsburgh, 48-7. I think it was like 35-0 at one point. Yeah, I don't know what's going on up there. And it's a bad time for that, because it looks like Clemson found their mojo. Clemson against UNC, they opened up the game with a receiver trick pass. It looked like they were having fun again, which is sounds cheesy, but like, you know, there's so much pressure on a national title team. When you go out, you lose three games. It's almost like, what are we playing for anymore? I think Dabo motivated them on the bye week, got them to be playing solid football, fun football again. And they're going to come in on fire in a Chestnut Hill. I've seen this matchup live a couple times up there. It's like mostly orange in the stadium when you go for this one. So there's no home field advantage, and pains me to say, being a BC alum, but I just don't see any reason to take BC in this. They were destroyed by Pittsburgh. Stanford beat them. When you're looking at the bottom of the Power Four landscape, you can probably throw five teams into this discussion. You got Stanford, BC, and UNC from the ACC, Oklahoma State. Who am I forgetting? We'll keep it at four.
UCLA?
I'm drawing a blank. UCLA. All right. I was going to bring up UCLA, and now they certainly answered their call against Penn State. So if you're looking at a bottom four, BC's certainly in that pack, and they lost to Stanford head-to-head. So you could argue they're the worst Power Four team in the country. I thought this would open up something like a 21. Like, I thought it'd be a 20 spot, and to see it only at 14, I think you take Clemson here. They're playing strong again.
All right, before we let you run, you mentioned Jerry Neuheisel. Once again, your coordinator of the week. I love how you do that. We got some pretty good coordinators going head-to-head in Eugene. We had an extensive breakdown with Wes Reynolds, who will be on, headed to the game. He does like Indiana to keep things competitive. What do you make of Indiana and Oregon, one of the games of the week out there in Autzen on Saturday?
Yeah, well, this is really strength versus strength. I can't really find a weakness statistically when you try and, you know, poke at it. I can't find anything here. Oregon, they really answered their call. They came in as one of the younger teams in America. I was a little skeptical. I thought they'd round into form by January, playoff time, but they're ahead of schedule. The way they played Penn State on the road in the whiteout, they're really, really perfect on both sides of the ball. Going up against Indiana, who, same deal, they've been perfect on both sides. Great coaching, great coordinators. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, you got Will Stein and Tosh Lupoi with Oregon, and Dan Lanning motivates his team. You got Kurt Cignetti, Brian Haynes on defense for them, and Mike Shanahan. Just great coaching. And I noticed this, Cignetti, he didn't add any fuel to the fire this week. You know, he used to be punchy last year with his quotes. This time he was very respectful, congratulated Dan Lanning. You know, no locker room material for Oregon. So I think it's going to be a heck of a game. I agree with Wes on this one, where I think probably Oregon wins, but I think it's a little bit closer than that number. I've got Oregon by about 3.5 or 4 points. So I see a competitive matchup here. And I can't wait to watch it. We're going to learn a lot about Indiana and see if they're going to be that third Big Ten team in the playoff hunt. I've got them in there right now, but this is really a prove it spot. Just don't get blown out. That would really shift the scope a little bit if we see a blowout. But I think they keep it competitive.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm excited for it, too. That 3:30 CBS game should be awesome. Brett, always appreciate it, man, checking in with you. Just a reminder, where can people get their mitts on Pick 6 Plus?
Yeah, thanks so much. Pick6previews.com, Pick6previews on Twitter. It's called Pick 6 Plus. It hits your email every Tuesday morning. It's a stats and information package on all 68 Power 4 teams. You got advanced stats, all my game grader stuff, my line projections against the spread trends. Like one little nugget here real quick with the Oregon-Indiana, I forgot to throw in. Something's got to give against the spread because Cignetti coming in is 12-6 overall against the spread. And then Lanning really strong at home, 16-7 against the spread in Eugene. And they're 18-0 the last 3 years at home straight up. So something's got to give. But yeah, all those situational splits are in there with Pick 6 Plus, talent profiles. Go check it out, pick6previews.com.
He's Brett Ciancia. He joins us every Wednesday here on the podcast. As he mentioned, follow him on Twitter at Pick6Previews. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. Thanks to Wyatt and Ryan, our producers of the podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, and on YouTube as well. We're back on Thursday as we break down all of the games. I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.